Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, Michael Anthony here. Van Halen, Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle. But anyway, you're listening to the only podcast that is dedicated to breaking down the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And the podcast will rock. Ow!
Hello, baby!
What is up, all you rockers, rockettes, and everything in between? You have joined us for a new edition of And the Podcast Will Rock. We are the show that digs into the catalogue and discography.
What are you doing?
I'm doing the intro.
What intro? This is not your show. Do you see anything related to Queen anywhere around here? Do you see Tom Petty's face in the corner of the window? You don't. It's not the same show. What's the matter with you? Brits always trying to take away from the Americans, always. And the Canadians. Yeah. Anyway.
You would have lost World War II without us, fucker.
No. Yes, that's true. You are one of us. So that lovely intro by the wonderful Kevin Brown. So thank you, Kevin, for doing that. So I don't have to do it this time. Everyone knows what this show is, but I did cut you off, so I'll just go ahead. Kevin was telling you, this is the show where we dive into the catalog and discography of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time, Van Halen, and we do it one track at a time. That is the aforementioned Kevin Brown of the Tom Petty Podcast, the Seaside Pod Review. I am your co-host, Mark Kammeyer. With me, as always, Corey Morissette. Corey, how are you feeling, and how did Kevin get in here so quickly?
I have no idea. I thought you let him in, to be honest with you, because I ended up in the studio. True story, and Kevin's here, so I'm like, all right, I guess am I doing Seaside Pod Review? I'm not doing that because they don't invite me on that show. They're very smart. They had me on once and they're never having me on again. Like, am I on the Tom Petty Project this week? Nope, same thing. I was on that show once, never gonna happen again. So I see my shit here. I see Van Halen, I see the little graphics I did up, so it must mean that it's a special occasion. But what could that occasion be, Mark? Do you know?
Well, in terms of letting Kevin in here, we'll just chalk it up to my wonderful fiance, who has a habit of not locking doors, and he just kind of just walked right on in. So, but fucking nevertheless, Brits. because it's you, Kevin, welcome. We appreciate it. Corey means well, but anyway, it's a special show tonight because you guys, after however many songs, after however many guests and reviews and all that jazz, you guys, we have hit 100 episodes. That's right. This is episode 100. Corey, almost 2 years later, we're still doing it. We've come up to triple digits. So to me, what that says is, hey, look at us. Good for us for being so consistent with a single show, which, you know, in the past life has not been a thing. But, you know, I digress. But actually, it says to me that it's kind of sad because that means that the Van Halen catalog no longer in the triple digits. In fact, we are very much reaching the end of the destination in terms of the Van Halen wheel. So but we're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on this milestone that we're at 100 episodes. And I gotta thank people like Kevin, like people like Tom, everybody in the lurking in the chat, our patrons, all of you guys for keeping us going, man, because this is certainly the longest I have been on the airwaves consistently. So thank you all so much. Appreciate it.
I like Tom's idea there. Free sets of steak knives for all patrons.
I never trusted someone enough to give them sharp knives. So I don't know. I don't know if we're there yet.
The way Tom's keyboard is slippery tonight, I don't think I'd trust him with a sharp knife right now.
That's right. Too many typos, Tom. Yeah. Typo Tom.
Yeah, he told us it was all goose out here.
Those Canada
Sorry,
gooses.
Tom. Sorry, Tom. Yeah.
But yeah, dude, Corey, episode 100. How you feel about that?
Yeah, kind of surprised we made it. I listen to Pot of Thunder. That's kind of my one of my main podcasts, and they're on episode 5, whatever. Like they've done this for almost a decade, but I never thought, 100 episodes of a show. I thought we would have been kicked off the air after like 20. And like you had alluded to, maybe another podcast group we're talking a part of, which I'm sure our special guest host for the evening will ask us about at one point. We definitely didn't make 100 episodes on that one. So I kind of thought you'd get sick of me at this point, Mark, and give me the boot. But happy to be here. 100 episodes. We only got 27 songs left on the wheel.
Jeez, under 30. No, if anyone was going to get the boot, it was going to be me because, as you all know, I am just along for the ride whilst, Corey devours each and every podcast one at a time, to gain more power. He's becoming ever more powerful. You guys, you're all just letting it happen. And, eventually all of the podcasting airwaves will be part of the CMPU and, me, I will just be a fortunate herald bringing in your coming. So watch out, all you other podcasts. You're done for.
I don't know. I'm going to retire after this one, I think. Holy shit. But we should explain why Kevin's here. And actually, Kevin reached out to me a couple episodes back and said, hey, you're coming up on your 100th. That's kind of a big deal. I'm like, I don't know.
Uh-huh,
I don't care. And he's like, yeah, we should do something special. And he kind of had some ideas. And so he said, Kevin, why don't you take over episode 100 and kind of do your own thing? And Kevin is like, aside from being a really cool guy, he has a lot of really cool ideas, and he kind of pitched us an idea of what he wanted to do tonight. I'm like, oh, that actually kind of sounds like a lot of fun. So we had some homework to do. We had some top tens to fill out and things like that, but I'm looking forward to getting right into it. So Kevin Brown, why don't you take it away?
Awesome, boys. Well, first of all, congratulations. You know, 100 podcasts, 100 episodes of a podcast is incredible. Not most podcasts don't get there. Everyone knows this, that it's, you know, I think it was average of about 15 or something, or 11, 12, 13, 14 or something. So getting to 100 and getting through almost this entire catalog with, and some of the guests you've had along the way is incredible. And I was looking up, so 5th of November, 2001 was your first episode. So
before we kick off,
and I do have a little bit of a format for us to go through, but I wanted to, so with the poll votes that you guys started doing, can I get a little bit of Price is Right music, Corey? Because we're gonna play a little, guest here.
Oh no! Right off the bat, Kevin wants to play the game that he knows I'm not gonna win every time. Why?
Okay. Over the whole, and I counted on. Like I am one of those sad little people who counts things. I went and counted all the poll votes you've had. So how many individual votes do you think you've had on all the polls that you've put up over the last 100 episodes, or 99 episodes before this one?
Holy shit!
So how many individual polls?
How many individual votes?
Votes.
Oh, votes. Oh. Corey, you go first.
Why do I have to go first? Kevin gets to pick who goes first.
Corey, go first.
Oh, shit. I'm going to guess.
Because I always go first in this game, and I always lose.
And this is close to 2 without going over, right?
Close to 2.
I'm going
to
say 11,173.
Okay. 11,173. Mark, what's your guess?
5,003.
Both very specific. I like it. Well, there is a three in the number, so you both got one number out of it. The winner doesn't usually win, almost never wins. Mr. Mark Kamire.
Oh!
The answer is 8,439 poll votes.
Oh, so
that's
my.
8,000 times.
I went over. I went over. Damn it, I lost the showcase.
But 8,500 people. So that just shows, but it leads into that. That shows that you've built this community. But what I want to talk about first is, just in case people don't know, the origins of the show. So where did you guys meet? When did you decide to do this? And how did it? How was it born?
I am a fan of movies and movie trivia, and there was an online movie trivia league called the Movie Trivia Schmodown that I really enjoyed, and there was kind of an offshoot league, a fan league that broke off of that called the. Movie Trivia Face Off, and they were looking for editors one day, and I thought, well, I like their stuff, and movie trivia is a lot of fun. I'm an editor by trade, so you know, I'll volunteer my time and I'll edit some matches. Well, that turned into editing every match, and that turned into being commissioner of the Inner Geekdom League, which was all geek movies like Star Wars, Star Trek, all that kind of stuff. And one of the main competitors in the Inner Geekdom League was one Mark Kamire. And one of the things I did as commissioner of that league, aside from booking all the matches, was I did a little interview show every week. And Mark was a guest on that show quite a few times. And, you know, we always kind of got along together. And then after our time with Movie Trivia kind of wound up, Mark became a part of a group called Feeding the Monster. Why don't you take it from there, Mark?
Feeding the Monster was a group of individuals who actually very similarly came from the Movie Trivia Face-Off League. One of them was not so much a competitor, but he was helping kind of people develop their character, their persona for these matches, because while the matches were true competition, we followed the Movie Trivia Schmodown route of each competitor has a character, like pro wrestling, you know, all kayfabe, you know, make a show of it. But then when it comes to the actual movie knowledge and the trivia, that's real. Me being a longtime pro wrestling fan, you know, that was right my jam right away. But anyway, so this collective group of people reached out to me and said, hey, we're putting something together. We like your vibe. We like you as a person. We want to, you know, would you want to come try this out with us? And then Corey joined in the mix as well, because, you know, we needed Corey. We needed that fresh voice. We needed that optimism that he provided, because I didn't bring the optimism. All of my bits on that podcasting feed were literally ranting about what I'm upset about in the nerd world. You know, every once in a while, I'd be like, no, let's celebrate this time. Let's celebrate this thing. But anyway, Feeding the Monster podcasting feed was the network we created with these individuals, and it went on for a while. The problem was we created a bit too much content and had zero listenership, and it just sort of, you know, fizzled out, as things do. But one day Corey reached out to me after that had already kind of been laid to rest and said, "I'm thinking about doing a Van Halen podcast. Would you be interested in that?" I said, yes, absolutely. I love Van Halen. I don't believe I told Corey that I wasn't an expert, but it was in my brain. I was just like, you know, there's a lot about the personal lives and a lot about just Van Halen's journey that I don't know about, because I just listened to it for the music and obviously the inspiration for Eddie Van Halen's guitar playing. But I thought, what the hell? It'll be fine. We'll listen to some songs. We'll talk about it. You know, I have a pretty good what I think is a good musical critique mindset. So I figured let's give it a shot. If nobody listens, whatever, as long as it's still fun, then we'll keep going. And that's kind of the principle we've been utilizing throughout this whole journey, is if it's fun, we'll keep it going. And if it's not and nobody cares, then I guess that's that. But at least we tried. And here we are, 100 episodes later.
And so, you know, you get that's the lead into this. But then when you're looking at, okay, what is this show going to be? You know, mm-hmm. is it going to be, are you going to do an album at a time? Are you going to do a song at a time? What was that decision like? And Corey, I know you took inspiration from Pot of Thunder, but how quickly did that come together and coalesce?
Oh, that was a complete ripoff of Pot of Thunder.
Yeah.
Because I was listening back. I've gone back to Pot of Thunder. I caught Pot of Thunder quite late, like around episode 4 or something. So I went back to episode 1. And at some point, while they were covering the entire Kiss catalog, they started taking questions from their listeners. And they call it a yard of questions. You could ask 3 questions. And someone asked a question, if you could do another band, this entire catalog, which band would you do? And the first thing they said was, first of all, we would never do that, because it's a lot of fucking work. You're listening to every song. True fans who think they're true fans really shit all over you if you get even the littlest minutiae wrong. They said, we'd never do it.
Kidding.
But one of the bands, they said, it'd be really cool to listen to a podcast on Van Halen, because they kind of hit all the bases. You want a band where not everything sounds the same, right? Like, it sounds like a great idea to do this format with AC/DC, because everything, it sounds pretty close and it's all great. But then every episode of your podcast sounds the same. You want to have different elements in there. So Van Halen has 3 different frontmen. So you have that dynamic that makes it interesting. You're comparing Dave, Sammy, and Gary. And let's face it, there's a couple of stinkers in the catalog. Not a ton. Not like Kiss, where there was like a lot of stinkers. But you think, okay, Up for Breakfast, that's going to be a fun show. Once, that's going to be a fun show. Spanked, if we ever spin it, should be a fun show. Like, just songs that aren't that great that you can have a little fun with. And obviously we over exaggerate, hopefully, for entertainment purposes, especially if people really like those songs. It's even more fun to kind of stick the needle in a little bit more and say, you know,
closer and closer, that spanking is coming.
But in terms of Van Halen, it hit those bases. But also on Mark's show, Rantings of a Maniac, he invited me on to that podcast when Eddie passed away, because he knew I was kind of a classic rock guy, to talk about Eddie Van Halen. And we talked for almost 2 hours, right? Just on Van Halen.
We did, yeah.
And so that's why when I listened to that Pot of Thunder, I'm like, well, hey, we can do that with Van Halen and give full credit to Pot of Thunder. They said, we don't want to do it. If somebody wants to take the ball and run with it, go ahead and run with it. So that's kind of what we did. And they had a random song generator, and I used the wheel when I was Intergeekdom movie commissioner. I would put categories on a wheel, and round 2 of movie trivia, the competitors would spin the wheel and get a category, James Bond, Alien, what have you. So I thought, let's just put every single Van Halen song on a wheel. Let's spin the thing and talk about it. And we always kind of framed it as just 2 fans talking. Like, we're not experts. Mark, I thought, had the musician kind of angle covered, because he's played instruments. He's a hell of a singer. He knows music. I'm a fountain of useless information. I thought, I don't know a shit ton about Van Halen, but I know more than the average fan, and I'm learning. We're going to learn about this band as we go along. And I thought, geez, I bet you a lot of people might want to go along with that ride. Diehard Van Halen fans? Fuck no. I'll never forget when Eric Senich wrote about us on the Van Halen news desk. We got a massive bump. Like, all of a sudden, our numbers on iTunes, we were the number 4 music podcast in America. That's beating Eddie Trunk. That's beating, like, everybody. We were number 4 on the fucking iTunes charts. And then we heard from everybody about how bad we sucked. And then we settled into kind of our normal numbers in the 80s on the iTunes charts. Like, that's a comfortable number for us. But we never tried to frame it as we're experts. We're learning as we go, and I know a hell of a lot more about Van Halen now than I did 100 episodes ago, and I love that. That's kind of why I wanted to do this.
And it's that thing that I think what you did right really early on is you got the engagement piece right. So your social media, and I know that, Corey, you don't love it. You don't love doing the social media, and it is a lot of work, but you found this and built this community of people who interact with you. And so did you notice a jump when you started doing polls? Because, I mean, polls on Twitter, people love them, right? And it's basically, there's some accounts that just post polls all the time. But the way you guys do it is different, because you are soliciting actual feedback from real people, and you read it out on the show. So was that sort of did you have a discussion around that and think, well, should we do this? Is it going to take up too much time? What did that look like?
I think I just posted a poll, and all of a sudden we're getting 100 votes on the poll. And then it was like, hey, Mark, we should actually maybe, we're getting some cool comments on these polls. Why don't we read them out on the show?
Yeah, like, there was no, I don't recall ever a conversation. I just saw, because at that time Corey was running the social media page, so he put up a poll. I was like, ooh, that's a cool idea. And then the way I remember it, it just became a mainstay, and that was it. And we were like, okay, yeah, there it is. Yeah. We're doing polls.
Well, and it's sort of, it makes us listeners feel like part of the conversation, right? Because that's what I was going to say, is I think the other thing that that twigged with me when I started listening to this show was, okay, this is music critique, but it's sort of just music critique is one part of it. Mainly it's entertainment. So I tune in for Van Halen, I stay for you two, right? I want to hear you two banter and have a little bit of back and forth and sort of have a little back and forth with the people online. I remember before any of us three met, I'd put a couple of things on Twitter and I got a bit of a kicking on a couple of things because I downvoted some song or other. I was like, okay, this is great because they are actually reading this and they do want this feedback. So like I said, I think that community that you built has probably, I assume, has sort of helped with the longevity of the show. So I wanted to talk about that.
Oh,
I was looking back through some of the early guests, and I've been on the show three times. This is my fourth time, not as part of a panel. There's one person who's also had four. Do you know who it is?
Is it Mariano?
It's Mariano. Yeah.
Of course it is.
So some of those early shows, again, I mean, because I think episode 31 was when I found you guys, and then I went back and started listening, and I remember talking to Corey about it. Who is this John Mariano prick? He's a miserable cuss. Like, he complains about everything. It's like,
but boy, if I had a nickel for every time.
But it's always in character. He's this persona, which again, just that really sort of was illuminating for me in terms of podcasting, because you think, oh, as well as the content, you can actually build a show around it too. So like I said, I think that's what's special about the show and what the patrons enjoy, what the lurkers enjoy, and what we all like about it. So any sort of specific like guests or memorable guest incidents or anything like that that you want to bring up? I know Christy's been a guest twice. I assume he's just over your left shoulder.
Yeah, she's been a guest twice, maybe thrice, maybe if she wants to. We were just mentioning guests and how many times they've been on the show. You've been on twice. Yes, you have. memorable shows, obviously.
And one more coming.
Yeah, one more. Yeah, exactly. There's one for sure come on the way. Yeah, and just because my brain's stuck on it, and I haven't talked to him in a while, but the horrible or the glorious realization when you realize that John Mariano, him being on all the time, that's just who he is. That's just John. So, yeah, take that for what it is.
He loves disturbing the shit. That's one of his favorite things.
He does, you know. Yeah. But we, I don't know, we seem to attract, you know, agents of chaos, a la Kevin Brown is here conducting this interview. So, you know how it goes. But that's just how we roll, man. And to speak on the entertainment aspect of it, If Corey and I weren't bantering back and forth and we were just only covering the songs and like nothing else, that would get so stale. That would just get really, really boring. And I think Corey and I can talk it up with the best of them, but it's just more fun when we get to just be ourselves and we get to just bullshit around and just sort of say what we want and then incorporate the actual like, oh, why we're here. But for sure, people like yourself, Kevin, and our lurkers here, everybody for sure keep. I enjoy when we get any guests on the show because it just tells me that, oh, look, people are enthusiastic to be part of this thing that, you know, Corey and I just started on a whim. And it kind of validates why we're here to me. And I like that.
Well, and so you got like a couple of pretty big guests on fairly early doors too. Like you say, you talked about Eric Senich, who's been on multiple times on the different panels, but getting him on for Cabo Wabo on episode 25. And then you got Greg Renoff. So how was that? Because I know that, Corey, we've had conversations offline about you don't always love interviewing, which is why, and again, the genius of what you do is when you have a guest on, they go through the format of the show. You spin the wheel, you talk about the song, they don't get to pick, you know, it's just the same format. But getting someone like Greg Renoff on, was that a little bit, were you a little bit more nervous about that one? Or?
But he's so 100%. Good at it. Like, Corey's so good at interviewing people. That's the thing. Like, even when he thinks he's terrible, like, no, you made it fun for them. Like, that's the thing, like, with getting Greg, with getting Eric, like they have fun when they come on here because I don't know, Corey and I are not pricks for one thing, and you know that helps. That goes a long way. And I think we also try to make it very, very plain to all the listeners, but especially the guests who are of some, you know, notoriety, like those two in particular. Like, we're not experts on this band. Like, you just understand that. Like, we're just fans. If you listen to the show, you know, real quick, like, oh yeah, these guys were like, they don't know every little nook and cranny, every single detail. No, we're not those people. That's why we have the guests come on, and they've been very very gracious to join us. Eric has been on so many times at this point. He's like yourself. He's an honorary member. And that guy is, if there's anybody who's, you know, the expert on Van Halen, it's him. And if he can give us our blessing, like, or his blessing, and every single time we have him on there, then it's good enough for me. But yeah, definitely those early days were nerve wracking, and getting Greg on for sure was kind of like, ooh, let's not make asses of ourselves on this one.
Yeah. Oh, I was shitting bricks, and even before that, episode 11, we had Chris L from Pot of Thunder. And I was so nervous about that one because we lifted their whole format. Yeah. And if anyone who listens to Pot of Thunder knows, Chris L could be a little cantankerous when it comes to things he doesn't like. Ask him what he thinks about Bruce Fairbairn, for example. And he will go off about how he wants to piss on his grave and things like that. So I was nervous that I would say something stupid. And I did. I was talking about Alex Van Halen's reputation as a drummer. And I didn't voice it correctly because I was very nervous, and I made it sound like I didn't think he was a very good drummer, but I meant to say, like, rock journalists don't seem to give him enough credit as a very good drummer. And he was good, getting ready to rip me a new one until I kind of said, no, it's actually what I've read about Alex coming into this podcast that's that opinion. He's always been one of my favorite drummers of all time. So I almost fucked that up really, really bad, but I was super nervous for that one. And Greg Runoff. Yeah. Because, you know, I just read his book, and we're on the call kind of before we hit record. He's talking about, you know, his interactions with all these people in the Van Halen sphere and all the Van Halen merch that he doesn't have room for. And Mark and I are like, you could send it our way. We'll take a little bit.
Yeah. This is like, come on, send it.
But, like, he, you know, written, I think, in my opinion, the best book about Van Halen that I've read so far. And to him at the end of the show, say, that was a hell of a lot of fun, I'll come back on anytime you guys want, was huge for me. Or even suggest other guests, like, hey, you should get so-and-so. Hey, you should get so-and-so. And I'll reach out to this person if you want. Like, that was really, really cool.
Yeah, Chris has been a great guest just because he is the way he is. And it fits our mold so well. And he just, it seems like he legit has a good time when he's on board. And, you know, as Corey says, he's just like, so he can be cantankerous at times, but not to us, like on this show at all. Yeah, just super cool, super awesome, interactive, and that's great. That means that we're doing okay. We're doing all right with what we're doing.
And he's going to be on the live show Friday night, I think. He said as long as his wife doesn't have anything planned for him, he had so much fun on the Fair Warning live show. For almost 3 hours, he's ready to come back for the Wounded Children show. So that's pretty cool.
Well, you've had you've got 42 different guests over 67 episodes that have been guest episodes. And a lot of those people, obviously, you've had people back, and there's some pairs, and you'll get panels and all this kind of stuff. So in terms of other people who've been on, who are some of the highlights that you've had? Like, people you weren't expecting to be as good as they were, or people who sort of surprised you with some of their opinions? Like, because I remember when, you know, Kelsey Van Halen was another one who just sort of stumbled into the podcast, but became almost like an icon, or sort of a mascot for the show, right?
Yeah, she was a big surprise because she's a lot younger than me.
Yeah, and, I mean, she's younger than me too, so it's like, yeah, so, I think she might be like our youngest guest, perhaps.
I would say
something like that. And then, but even then, when she comes on, man, she just, like, she's ready to go. Like, she's ready to talk some Van Halen, and she can do it. If you give her the platform, she'll just go on and on and on. And that's good energy that we, you know, feed off of. Cause, and then I have to be on my A game, like, oh shit, like, Kelsey's going to take my job, I guess, cause she's a way better host than I am.
Everybody loves Kelsey. Yeah.
But yeah, so like, but that one was a little bit kind of, I won't say nerve wracking. That was just, Kelsey was a surprise just because, you know, she's the younger, variety, and you never know how these things are going to do. Like, Corey and I is like, we're cool dudes. We're just here to talk about Van Halen. You know, we're not trying to put you on the spot of like, all right, name three songs, Kelsey, tell the world, you know, things like, you're like, no, it's like, we're here to just talk about whatever we spin, and let's just have a good time. And thankfully she's had a good time, and she's been a mainstay. So that's been very, very cool. I mean, hell, I didn't know what to make of you, Kevin. And then look at that. You have become like a mainstay on the show, and you've contributed so much. Like, our merch store is, you know, you're doing, and for the most part, you're doing. And that just tickles me, man. Every time there's a new design or just some little inside joke that's been made into a shirt, it's just like, I love it. But yeah, just I have moments of awe when I even think about like people like they want to be on the show. Like, just really, they do. Yeah. They want to come back. They like, are we doing okay? Like, do they realize that we're not we're just, you know, two schmoes just, you know, gabbing fucking about around. Van Halen. Like, yeah, we're just fucking around. But yeah, so I just honestly, everybody kind of stands out to me on that front.
Like I've expressed this to you privately, Kevin. What we did was we had so many people reaching out saying, I want to be on the show and be our show. And I didn't say no to anybody. I'm like, sure, let's slot you in. To the point where we had a ginormous backlog of people reaching out, wanting to be on the show. And we've been very fortunate that every single guest has been good. I haven't come off a show thinking, oh man, that sucked. I've come off thinking I've sucked, but I haven't come off thinking, oh man, the guest was wrong or the flow wasn't there.
Yeah.
Every single show has been great. There's been some standouts. You mentioned Kelsey, Greg DePasquale. We got him for Omni Say I. That was fucking great. Ooh, because, yeah. And we weren't on YouTube at that time, but the sing-alongs he was doing and the faces he was making was just hilarious. But one of my all-time favorites, Sean and Todd McGinnity. Like, they just kind of reached out one day and said, hey, we almost did your show, breaking down Van Halen, and then you went and fucking did it, and did it probably better than we could have. So I started listening to their stuff, and I love their dynamic. And every time they come on the show, Sean and Todd, I hurt from laughing. Because it's always just a good time. And usually those are the ones that we get the most hate mail on. Like, oh, you didn't get to the song until such and such a time. It's like, I don't even fucking care. Because I had such a great time. And now those guys are just two of my favorite people. And they do one of my favorite podcasts of all time. So the fact that we can meet people like you and Sean and Todd and Scott Haskin and the Deep Purple Podcast Boys and the Pot of Thunder Boys and all these great podcasters, like when we got invited into the Deep Dive Podcast Network, so many great shows and so many cool people. That has been, you know, really, really surprising and really, really welcome on my part.
That's why it's been, I say all of our guests really stand out to me, just because so many of them, it doesn't stop at the, you know, once we start recording and then stop and they're like, all right, that's the extent of our working relationship now, or that's, you know, that's it, you know, see you never. No, it's like the conversations keep going. Like we keep in touch. We follow each other on social medias. We repost, we interact, and like with yourself, with Sean and Todd, with Greg, and just, and it's everybody. It's just the conversations, they keep going, and they extend outside of the topic of this particular show. And we just, you know, we just talk about the things that we like, and we just, you know, it's kind of brought a community within the community, so to speak. There's a podcast will rock community. And you know, you're part of it, Sean's part of it, Kelsey, like our lurkers obviously, and it's really weird to me to say that we have like a little community within this little, you know, rock podcasting community, but here we are.
But it's because, I mean, and I'll speak for myself as a guest on the show, and I'm sure I'd echo the sentiments of other people here. The common denominator there is, yeah, all your guests are awesome, but it's because you guys are so welcoming, and it's just so easy hanging out. It's just like hanging out with your friends talking about music. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Right? So there's no pressure. You guys are never snobby. You're not difficult to work with or be with. So that's all down to you. But, you know, when you come on, you've had some episodes where you've had really memorable moments. And I remember Sean and Todd were on the very famous Play Splat and Bone, right? So, you know, all those the designs and things, it comes up because all these weird things happen. So,
yeah. Alex Van Hyundai, that was another one that stands out.
Whatever happened to Heath Murphy, like that whole thing is still like
that was like
time...
our first live show, I think, right? Where you're like, and Heath Murphy's here. It's like, really? Where?
Like, who's like, the who's fuck Heath is Murphy? That? I was like, oh, damn, it's McCoy. Yeah, apologies to Heath McCoy, but yeah, he's one of our favorites too, man. And he took that and just rolled with it just because I flubbed, but yeah, that one stands out. Greg DePasquale's episode stands out just because, yeah, as Corey said, if only we had been recording on video that episode at the time, because just he was just losing his mind. He was so excited to be a guest on the show, and we were excited to have him, and we spun How Many Say I, and that the fun just devolved into not fun, but we were laughing. I mean, we just like, we have to laugh to stop from like crying or spitting out angry expletives, because, you know.
It wasn't laughing at Eddie. Yeah, it wasn't laughing at the song. It was more celebrating.
It was laughing at the absurdity of the situation because it's like, God, this was the song we have to talk about. Yeah. It's not everyone's favorite. At the time, it was our least favorite. The other one, I think, trumped it for me. But yeah, that one, that moment of the wow, we finally spun a real stinker, and boy, does it stink. And unfortunately, we have a guest with us, and this guest who was so excited to be on the show, and that's the song he got. And then the second
time he was on, he spun his second most hated song of all time by Van Halen, Can't Stop Loving You from Balance. And that was when I said, all right, fuck, we're going to do a mulligan. And we respun, and we got something better.
I think you got Source of Infection. I think it was the respin, I believe, right?
I think so, yeah.
I think, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that was the one. Actually, I think we've had two mulligans on the show, and that's only because...
One for me, one for you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, Corey used his for poor Greg because he literally told us what he didn't want to land on, and he landed on it. And
I thought he was going to cry. Like, he was just so deflated.
He was.
Oh, man, you could, like, as a listener, you could hear the air go out of him. You could hear, oh, man, this poor guy. But the wheel is a fucker. So, we've established that. The wheel is not enough.
Oh, my God, yeah. Especially early. Yeah. Like, it was all Dave, and it's like, man, is this going to be, are we going to have, like, 40 Sammy songs to finish the podcast? Like, what's going on here?
I mean, look, we're not 40, but probably the majority of the 29 left, or the 20, however many left,
And I know Scott Monroe pointed out the DLR cast. That was you use your mulligan on them because they spun
tune. Yes.
And it's like, how do we get the David Lee Roth guys on the show and spin a Sammy tune, right? We got to spin a Dave tune. So,
I mean, it was
Pleasure
good.
Dome at first. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. Thank you, Scott. Yeah.
That's right. You got away with that one.
No, I had no problem with spinning in mulligan, and we're going to get the Pleasure Dome. I don't hate it as much as people think I do, but it'll be an interesting show.
We'll see.
Well, let's talk about preconceptions then, because obviously we all come into catalogs with those preconceptions. Mark, you and I were both, I think, more or less a real sort of hardcore Sammy guys, kind of like the Dave too, but not to the same extent.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really, sort of engendered a love of David Lee Roth in me as well that I didn't think was ever going to be there. But how has your love of this band and the music this band has made over the years changed as the show has gone on? What is that? Has it changed at all? Is it pretty much the same, or have you thought, actually, this is better than I thought? It's more diverse than I thought. What are your thoughts on that?
For me, just on a musicality level, like I said, I've always loved Van Halen. I've always appreciated their music, but I was also very selective of the songs at the time. This show has really kind of forced me to listen to all, that's the point of the show. We're going to go through all of the catalogs. So there was a lot of blanks in the resume, so to speak, of like, what have I consumed in my brain enough from Van Halen? And there are many blanks. So this show has informed me of, okay, we know you like that, but listen to some of these deeper cuts, some of these other tracks that didn't get airplay, don't get talked about. Like, listen to them and really explore their true musicality. And I won't say my opinion has changed on them, but it's definitely my eyes have been and ears have been opened pretty greatly to just the. I always knew Eddie Van Halen was a dynamic musician because you don't play like that and you're not, you know what I mean? But I guess I really never sat down to really think about and analyze the musicianship of everybody, especially I've mentioned this on the show so many times. I'll say it again. I didn't think Alex Van Halen was a terrible drummer, but I went into the show always with the belief, and I had always heard it from like certain musicians in Nashville. Now I realize like, oh, you're just bitter. But I was always under the belief that Alex was just a meh drummer. And it's like, yeah, Van Halen, like, they're great. But man, they could have been really, really great with a really explosive, awesome drummer. And that's, of course, my naive brain, because it's like, I'm not really listening, am I? This show forced me to do that in a good way. Like, forced me to really listen. And I've mentioned how much like I love Alex Van Halen's playing. Like, he is not a mad drummer at all, absolutely not. To the contrary, he is an astounding drummer to do the things that he is able to do. And the brilliance of him is you don't even realize it. You don't even realize the little subtle nuances he's putting into drumming. And that's hard to do. And that's hard to convey to music fans that are not in tune with drumming. You know what I mean? Like drummers are obviously going to be impressed because they know they're already in it. I'm impressed with guitar players. I play guitar. So it was like, I know what it takes. Vocalists, same way, and all that. But now, you know, and over the years, really developing my ear for drumming, and this show really just sort of kind of shattered the glass of like, you think he's a man drummer? Let's shatter the glass and show you the truth underneath of it. And it's like, no, this guy's incredible. So in that regard, it's really expanded my, let's say, musical respect. If it could be any higher, it certainly is.
Awesome.
And for me, I got a greater appreciation for albums like A Different Kind of Truth and OU812, which were albums I think initially I just kind of like, they're fine. I didn't pay much mind to, but now that you're digging into them, you're listening to them with a fresh set of ears. Like, oh, that's actually really cool. Oh, that's really good. And then Black and Blue, that's a fucking great song. What are you talking about? That's on OU812. That's amazing. We haven't done that song yet. I guess I just tipped my hand.
Right. Yeah.
On that one.
Same. Yeah. The I've got such a high appreciation for Fair Warning now that I never had in the past. Even Women and Children First. You know, not to tip my hand. I'm just saying, like, I appreciate, I don't love it probably as much as other albums, obviously, but I appreciate the musicianship that has gone into it, and it's because we've listened to it like front to back, and you know, we've analyzed it, we've talked about it. So like Corey said, deeper appreciation for the albums.
Well, that was, so looking through, because we're going to get into it in a little bit here, your top tens that I asked you to put together of the songs that you've covered so far, were a couple of songs in either side. I thought, you know, I don't know if Mark picks those two songs before this podcast. Like, if you ask Mark before the podcast, what are your top 10? I bet it doesn't look like this. And I bet similarly, Corey, there's a couple on there. It's like, I don't know that I don't think I would have necessarily guessed that one. I thought he might go this way. Right. So I think it shows that when you do dive headfirst into an artist's catalog, like even one that you know, your appreciation of it just increases, right?
Oh, yeah. I can confirm there are probably 4 songs on the list that I gave you that if you had asked me prior to the show, would not have made the list.
Yeah.
There's 2 on my, or 3 on mine, for sure, that may have not have made the list, but after we did them, did them on the show, that absolutely made my list. So yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Awesome. Well, let's get into some, I gave you 10 questions. I've got my little, and I adopted this and pulled this from my Tom Petty Project podcast, and I always ask my guests,
which is a great show, by the way. Everyone should listen to the Tom Petty Project. Fantastic show. How you podcast by yourself and make it that entertaining is beyond me. I'll never be able to do that in my lifetime, and I just admire you so much for it.
Well, thank you, sir. Okay, so I'll start with Mark, and I'll alternate on each question. But Mark, favorite Van Halen album? It's the arm up the back. The worst question for any fan of a band. If you have to pick only one album, which one are you going with?
Fuck.
No hesitation, straight in. I would have guessed it, and I think pretty much all the patrons and lurkers would have as well, but good to have it confirmed. Corey, what's yours?
Mine's Van Halen too, and I know you can make arguments it's not the best Van Halen album. It's my personal favorite. Yeah. This is the album where every single song, even the instrumental, is one of my absolute favorite instrumentals in Van Halen's catalog. I love every single track on that. One of my all-time favorite Van Halen tunes, actually 2, are on that record. So to me, it's Van Halen 2. I know Van Halen 1's a better record. I know Fair Warning technically is a better record. And if I was picking a Sammy record, it'd be Fuck. Same as Mark, because I just remember 1991 and getting that record and just falling in love with it, even though it had Spanked on it. And everybody is kind of picking out my problems is with Pleasure Dome. It's cool music with dopey lyrics and dopey delivery. That's spoiler alert. That's pretty much exactly how I feel on that one. But for me, just top to bottom, I could put it on. Love every single track. It's Van Halen too, and I can do that with almost every Van Halen record. Like we're going through Women and Children right now, and for that record, for me, it's solid front to back. But nothing really jumps out as being fantastic, right? Whereas Dance the Night Away, Out of Love Again, Somebody Get Me a Doctor. There's so many tracks on Van Halen 2 that I just love that for me, it's my personal favorite.
Mm-hmm. I didn't have this isn't a question on my list, but do you remember which album you heard first, each of you?
Mine was 1984 because I was I was 10 years old, and we had Much Music back then. We didn't have MTV, or we might have had MTV on a satellite dish. I can't remember, but Jump, that video was everywhere in 1984, yeah. And then Panama, and then Hot for Teacher. So that became the album. That was the first Van Halen record I ever got. And then I, you know, 5150 came out, and I'm like, it's not the same guy. So I went back, and that's when I got Women and Children and Diver Down and Fair Warning and 1 and 2. But for me, it was 1984. And then I kind of fell off Van Halen a little bit until 4 Unlawful. And that one brought me all the way back. And that's when I'm like, I got to pick up 5150, and I got to, you know, pick up OU812. And,
yeah,
you know, that was the album that really got me back into him. Oh, Jeff, Jeff was crying about how he's always right. You're fucking wrong on Spanish. Yeah, you're just
very
fucking wrong,
Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff says
unbelievably wrong.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're wrong. Yeah. In its entirety, the first album I remember listening to of Van Halen was For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge, which explains, I mean, that's why it's my personal favorite, really, because that's the album that the first Van Halen album that I actually like from start to finish, if you don't count the Best of Volume One, which technically I don't, because that's like, it's a compilation. But it was that compilation was influential to me, sure. But in terms of a Van Halen full length album, what I listened to in its entirety, it was For Unlawful.
When it goes to what you said earlier, though, Corey, right, about because this catalog, it's not all gold. There's some weird stuff in there. The albums are all each very different. I mean, 1 and 2 are, you know, they share sort of a similarity, but they're very different albums. So it's going to connect with different people in different ways. And that's the beauty of Van Halen. It's why we all love them and why we all still talk about them. You know, even though they've not been a recording concern for many, many years, we still love talking about them. So the big question, number two, Dave or Sammy? As a solo artist, though. So I'm not going to put, because we all know that we all love it. So who do you prefer as a solo artist, Dave or Sammy? So
is it my turn?
Your turn first, Corey. Yeah.
I gotta go Dave. I really like his solo catalog, like Eat 'Em and Smile, Skyscraper, and A Little Late Enough. I love those records so damn much. I haven't listened to the ones past A Little Late Enough so much, but I remember getting A Little Late Enough and listening to Sensible Shoes and thinking, for some reason, I like this. I don't know why, but it fucking rocks. Or Eat 'Em and Smile and Ladies Night in Buffalo. And I'm like, I like this. Like, it had such.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's a great fucking band on Eat 'Em and Smile, right? And just like Paradise off Skyscraper. Sammy is a really cool solo artist I like, but I didn't really pick up a Sammy record. I got my first ever Sammy solo record for my birthday this year. And I got VOA. So I haven't really listened to a ton of his catalog. I listened to Fast Times at Ridgemont High. The Winner Takes It All from Over the Top, because I'm a big movie guy. But I did listen, you know, outside of I Can't Drive 55. But I had all the Dave solo records up to A Little Late Enough. So I got to go Dave on that one.
Okay, Mark.
It's fair, and it might surprise you. I really, really love a lot of Dave's solo stuff. I do. But when you ask me who's the better Van Halen frontman in their solo career, it's unquestionably Sammy. Just in the turn, I think he, you know, say what you will about his time in Van Halen writing songs, but I think his solo songwriting was top notch. And he just, you know, he's the better musician. All, you know, just if we're just gonna speak technically here, he just, I don't know, it felt more, anything I hear from Sammy solo feels more authentic Whereas a lot of Dave's stuff just sort of sounds a little like hijinks and like I'm all show, very little substance. We know that's not accurate, but that's just the vibe I get from a lot of his solo stuff. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy it. But, you know, if I'm enjoying it like, I can just like listen to this and go about my day. But, you know, whereas Sammy's going to write like a rocking tune, like I'm going to sit down and listen to it and go like, what are you saying, Sammy? What are you saying? Not always is he saying something that's coherent, but I mean, like he's saying it very well. And so for me, the final question comes from, which one of these dudes survives on their own the best without Van Halen's crutch? And it's Sammy.
I don't disagree with that. And my big thing was I haven't heard a lot of Sammy solo. If we go past this wheel and do some more Sammy stuff, I might side with you. I've just heard more Dave, and he has some of my favorite tracks. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's also there's a volume issue here, right? Because I was having a conversation with someone on Twitter about this. So Dave's got 6 solo albums. Sammy's got 20, plus 2 with Montrose, plus 2 with Chickenfoot. You know what I mean? So there's that side of it. But what I was talking about on Twitter with this guy was, and I probably am wrong on this, it always struck me that Sammy's more of a music guy, if you know what I mean. So Sammy, you get the idea that Sammy would play music if he was a high school janitor, if he was playing to one person in a pub. He's always going to write songs. He's always going to play songs.
Oh, yeah.
David Lee Roth, to me, is more around the edges of that, and he likes the limelight and the spotlight more. That was always my sense of it. Now, someone pointed out that Dave's an encyclopedic knowledge of certain types of music, and he loves, you know, all the music hall stuff and this kind of business. But that, to me, is always things. Sammy's a working musician. Sammy Hagar, if he wasn't famous, would still be playing 100 gigs a year, right? It's just in his bones, and that's the difference for me, and that's why I would always tend to drift over to Sammy as well. So, yeah.
But it's something to be said, though, like, if we utilize that mindset, too. There is something to be said about Dave. If Sammy's the kind of guy that would be playing, like, you know, bar gigs till he's, you know, 1,000 years old. He's close, but he's not. But I mean, by the time he's 1,000 years old, just playing them, you know, whatever, if he didn't become Sammy Hagar. Whereas Dave is more like, I'm not gonna waste my time and energy doing that unless I know I'm gonna be like, you know, on the big stage, I'm gonna be in the spotlight. Like, I'm not gonna give him my superhero self until, you know, unless there is, if the money is right and you know, if the audience is there. So it's like, is he the smarter one in that regard, or is he just like, is he more clever in that regard, or do they just approach music in different ways? And I think all the answers are yes and, you know.
Ryan sums up great. Music seems to be a means to an end for Dave. And I agree with that. I've just heard and enjoyed more Dave solo. I'm looking forward to digging more into Sammy. He is by far the better musician, better songwriter, all that stuff. Dave's about the show. That's why he does covers of California Girls and things like that, right? He's all about...
Right.
I was watching a clip again of when they were on the Ellen show, Van Halen, and just a big shit-eating grin on his face. He looked like a fucking idiot wearing a suit, jumping around. And it didn't matter that he couldn't sing a lick. He was all about the show. He's all about the flash, right? Sammy, definitely a better musician. And I would imagine absolutely a better solo artist. This question right now, from what I've heard, I got a soft spot for Dave. But if we ever get into a Sammy wheel, I could see that opinion changing rather quickly. And Scott says, in another multiverse, Dave Lee Roth is an Academy Award winning film star. 100% correct.
I mean, that's actually very true. I can see that. Yeah.
Or a serial killer. Anything to get on the front pages of the paper, right?
No. That's right.
Yeah. Why not both?
Why not both?
Okay, question 3 to you first, Mark. If you could join Van Halen, and we're going to say any era of Van Halen, so you can pick your era as well. We've got the DeLorean primed up. It's ready to go back in time. You can join Van Halen on stage for one song. What would it be, and would you sing and or play?
There's no chance I'm playing with Eddie Van Halen on stage. Not a chance. You can call me a bitch or a pussy all you want. Like, nope, not a chance. However, it's gotta be Ain't Talking About Love. Then I just push Dave away. Like, I got this, man. You can go sit down or do a bump, whatever you got to do. I got this. Here we go. Ain't Talking About Love. And it, you know, I would have to, you know, the era of, not quite 84, but like probably when they were still riding pretty high off of, you know, the first couple of albums, that era, I think. Yeah. Just when they're at their prime, you know, and they're just like moving and moving and moving, and like everything's a party, everything's fun, and they're just playing at their top tier level. That's the area.
And so you can forgive Dave a little bit for some of that too, because who wouldn't want to front that? You know, with that beautiful racket going on behind, you wouldn't want to be involved in the show there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Corey.
But sing.
All you have to do is shout, hey, 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 on the outro. Absolutely, Scott. Good call. For me, because I'm a hobbyist drummer and I love Alex Van Halen. Not that I could play anything even close to Alex Van Halen, but one of the most fun songs I've ever played on drums is Panama. And I'm thinking, if I ever got to go on stage with Van Halen and play Panama on the drums, holy fuck, would that be great. Like, it's such a fun song to play. It's not their technically most proficient. It's not the hardest. You know, try to actually get the beginning of Hot for Teacher on the drums. I remember when I set up my drum kit, I brought a friend over who's been playing drums for 20 years, and he hadn't heard Hot for Teacher for some reason. I played him the intro, and he said, well, that's just impossible. And I had to laugh because it kind of is. Like, that's how good Alex Van Halen is. But, man, if I could get on stage like Josh Freese at the Foo Fighter tribute concerts there and play Panama with like Wolfie and all those guys, man, would that be fucking fun? I would love to play Panama with anybody.
Well, you never know. Yeah. Maybe, you know, if the tribute to Eddie Van Halen ever does come to fruition, you know,
I'm ready.
The podcast will rock. The patrons will
get it. I got
my sticks. We'll get a petition going. You know, because
you know,
the podcast has to be there, and maybe you can jump on.
I will fuck it up. I will fuck it up, but I will have a big grin on my face. I'll look like Dave on the Ellen Show. Just
I tell you,
like an asshole.
There, it's not Van Halen, but there is a touring band that does play songs of that era quite frequently, and they do on occasion bring up people to guest play on particular songs, and that band is called Steel Panther. Yes. And I haven't heard them do it, but I'm pretty sure Panama's probably in their repertoire somewhere in there.
Have to be.
And I'm not saying I know the band. I'm definitely not saying that I know someone who absolutely knows the band. I'm just saying that there's, never say never, Corey. Never say never.
They're playing Saskatchewan, I think, this fall sometime, Kev. So yeah,
hell yeah.
We have to go.
Go to that show. It's so fun.
And they have done Panama 52 times.
Oh, so shit. Well, there you are. Look, if they can bring up Jeremy Piven to play Back in Black on drums, and he's like, he's playing it, but I mean, he's not playing it well, but it still went off for a while, you're good. You're fine.
Yeah. Well, it works for Tommy Lee and Motley Crue, right? You just play the tracks. It's fine. Just wave your arms around. It'll be good.
Yeah.
Look, in defense of Tommy Lee.
There is no defense. I'm going to stop you right there.
No, I was just going to say it's really difficult to play drums with, you know, that third arm. But, thank you, love.
Ooh, that's a big one.
Oh, nice.
It's a giant beer.
That's what she said.
Okay, number four. Corey, who would be your dream opening act at Van Halen show?
I went Mammoth WVH. I mean, how great would it be to see Wolfie open for his old man? Like a reunited Van Halen with Wolfie opening, and I'm really getting into Mammoth 2 right now. That's been on my turntable for like the last 2 weeks. I love that record. I absolutely love the first one. I would love to see Wolfie open for Van Halen. I'm going to see him open for Metallica next August, but to me, that would be the ultimate opening act.
Well, and you get that cross pollination too, because he would definitely come out because he could definitely come out and join Van Halen, right? You could have him. What about this? Both of them playing bass. Get two bass players in Van Halen. That'll be amazing. Mark.
Absolutely.
Is this like any era of Van Halen? I missed that.
Any era. Yeah. We've got time travel.
Who would I like to see them open up for him? God. Part of me wants to name like some like ridiculous metal band that would never play that shit just because the styles are so different. But maybe I would like to fuck it. I'm going to say it. I would like to see Sleep Token open up for Van Halen. pick an era. I know that sounds. Chrissy's. Yeah, she's like,
Chrissy's like,
about?
What?
Like, no. I know.
I don't even know that fucking band.
Never heard of him.
You haven't? Okay. Well, you both are in it for a treat later at some point. Give that band a whirl and see if you can remotely figure out what they are, because I won't tell you that they're metal. I won't tell you that they're soul, and I won't tell you that they're a bit of like British trip hop, but I'm not saying they're not all of those things and more.
Wow.
They're a very odd band, but oh my God, but they're taking the world by storm right now. And would they fit a Van Halen mold? Absolutely not. But I think you would never forget that live show. You'd never forget. Even if you had never heard of either one of those bands, you're going to be talking about it later. You're either going to be talking about Sleep Token and the whole gimmick of them and trying to figure out like what the hell was that, or you're going to be talking about holy shit, Van Halen, like that show was amazing because it's Van Halen. You know, pick an era. Either way, you're not forgetting that show. So is it ridiculous? Yes, but I'm sticking with it.
I don't think it's any more ridiculous though than some of the bills that Van Halen were on in the early days. Like you look at, you know, when Van Halen's on the same bill as Jim Croce, or they're on the same bill as Boston, they're opening for Boston, which, you know, okay, Boston's a rock act, but they're nothing like Van Halen. So
no,
I think that totally, totally works.
So there you go. I don't feel too ridiculous. Just that one is of a particular era, and the other is of today.
Yeah.
God bless Ryan Powell. How about Cool in the Gang?
Cool in the Gang.
that would be awesome.
That would never happen.
Would be a
fun
show.
Okay, yeah. Mark.
Yes.
Who is your favorite band member not named Eddie Van Halen?
David Lee Roth.
Michael Anthony.
Michael Anthony, yeah, okay, good.
Michael Anthony.
Why?
Well, for one, I and I've mentioned this on several different shows, several different songs that we've covered. He is the, pardon the pun, the unsung hero of many a Van Halen track, whether it's just contributing the high harmonies, which you can always count on, or it's what he's doing on bass, which you're everyone's so busy listening to what Eddie's doing. For some, you're listening to what Alex is doing, and for most, you're listening to whatever Sammy or Dave are doing, and that's really what you're listening to Van Halen for. Very few people, except for like, you know, the hardcore basis, obviously. But I mean, very few people are really tuning in to that low end and what Michael is doing. And there are times where Michael's doing a lot. And it's kind of, the show has also unfortunately opened my eyes to some of the negatives that, you know, go along with Van Halen's journey. And a lot of that negative points at the treatment of Michael.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I feel terrible about that, because as far as I can tell, he didn't deserve any sort of like harsh treatment or negative feelings, but he just went out there and did his job and had fun with it. You can argue the semantics of what he contributed actually to the writing process or whatever, but at the end of the day, the man's a performer. The man's a workhorse. He's been doing this for a long time, and man, can he play, and man, can he carry a tune when you let him. So just for that, and he's just always consistently awesome, at least for me. So Michael Anthony.
It's such a weird non sequitur, the whole idea that he didn't contribute creatively to the songs. There's tons of people who didn't contribute creatively and are integral parts of that band. Like there's a lot. I mean, every single.
Correct.
I mean, Jesus, I don't know. Like, Now I'm trying to struggle because all my favorite bands do have multiple. But like Ron Blair in Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, bass player, never wrote a note, right? But take it out, and it's not the same, right? And I think, you know, having seen, lucky enough to see Van Halen, Michael Anthony blew me away. Like, absolutely was. I mean, Sammy was phenomenal, jumping around all the place. Eddie had his samurai thing, and he was a bit weird, but super cool. It's fucking Eddie Van Halen. Alex is doing. It was Michael Anthony. I was riveted by Michael Anthony. He was the one I was watching, thinking, "Fuck me, this guy's a performer." This guy knows how to work a crowd. He's playing, I mean, those 16ths that he plays on Pound Cake, he's a great player. I don't give all that whole thing, but Michael Anthony can't play bullshit. So, I'm totally on board with
incredible.
That. And I would say, too, that I would probably, Mike and probably Al are the only people who really never get any stick on this show. Realistically, you know, like you said, there's a lot of love thrown to those two because they're rock solid. Corey. How about you? Who's your favorite member?
Well, and I knew I'm pretty sure Mark would go with Mike, and it's funny because I'm reading Steve Rosen's book Tone Chaser, and as far back as Van Halen 2, Eddie was bitching about Mike, and like, oh, I hate his tone. And oh, it, you know, in the monitor, all I hear is Alex. And so I went with Alex. I don't think Alex get as much credit with this band as he deserves. Because Eddie even says in an interview in that book that, you know, Dave's the lyric guy. And Eddie's kind of everything else, but everything he does funnels through Alex. And Alex is very much part of melody and part of bridging what Dave does and what Eddie does and brings them together. That was Alex's role. Mm-hmm. So when we originally started this podcast, I thought, well, what the fuck did Alex do to earn songwriting credits? Because, of course, 1984, you know, they got rid of Mikey's sound or songwriting credits, his publishing rights. I'm like, well, yeah. What did Mike, you know, what did Alex do? And now I know so much more than I did back then. He actually did a lot when it came to the songwriting. He didn't write the melodies. He obviously didn't help with guitars, obviously, or bass, and he didn't help with lyrics, but he was that bridge between Dave and Eddie and to bring those songs together. And the other really enlightening thing for me was listening to Eddie's solos and what Alex did underneath. And every once in a while, he'd throw in just a little thing, just a little roll or just a little thing like, hey, little brother, I'm here too. Like, yeah. It's a cool little thing, and he does it on so many songs. I'm like, that is so fucking wicked that he has a virtuoso brother, but it's like, hey, you know what, I'm here too, and I'm gonna throw this in here, and I'm gonna make your solo fucking better. And he did that a lot. Top five rock and roll drummer for me, Alex Van Halen, 100%, and an unsung hero in Van Halen, although I do agree with Mark as well. Mikey is pretty fucking cool.
Here's a statement, and I'll see what you guys think of this. I don't think that Alex, and you know, Alex hasn't played since Van Halen. I don't think Alex Van Halen or Eddie Van Halen could have been in a band without the other. They could have been, but it wouldn't. I don't think it would have worked because they were the perfect sort of counterpoint to each other, right? Where they sort of needed each other. Yeah. That relationship was so symbiotic that you take one out, and what are you left with? You know,
100% agree. And you've listened to the Starfleet stuff, right?
Yeah,
you have that whole box set, right? Eddie's obviously great on it. Would it have been better with Alex playing along? I think so.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
Just, I mean, as you say, like, the two of them just knew each other's musical sensibilities, you know, that they're brothers, so they, you know, sharing a passion, that just, it just naturally comes together that way, and they both, I would say, elevate one another. Mm-hmm. You take one out, they could still thrive, but I don't think as well. It doesn't diminish their ability as musicians whatsoever. It just means that there's chemistry and you don't mess with that. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, and I mean, the Starfleet project, Corey, you know, of course, Brian May, that's a jam, though. That's not a band, right? There was no intention of that ever being a band. They weren't really sure whether they should record it. They just did, right? Okay, so, Corey, if you could go to see any Van Halen concert from history, which one would you go to and why?
Oh, man, I had a hard time with this one, but I kind of went with my heart. And the second live album I ever owned was live right here, right now. So I would pick that Fresno show or shows that they recorded live right here, right now, because I love that live album so much. My first ever live album was Poison, Swallow This Live, which I think came out in like 91, 92, because that was the first ever concert I went to was Poison in the Agrodome in Regina, Saskatchewan with Don Dokken, not Dokken, Don fucking Dokken opening for him because they just kicked Warrant off the tour. So I had a cranky old Don Dokken bitching about how much he hates MTV, how much he hates Poison, and how much he hates Canada. It's like, why the fuck am I here? This guy sucks, but Poison put on a decent show. But I remember getting live right here, right now, and playing the fuck out. I could have picked the show from Live Without an Ad. I could have picked any number of Dave shows from the, you know, 84 tour. You know, there's so many classic gigs. But for me personally, I listened to Live Right Here, Right Now so many times. I would have loved to have been at that Fresno show.
Well, and that's the one where Sammy does that version of Eagles Fly that I think I said on the live stream that it... of any concert in history, that's one of the songs that I would have loved to have seen live because it was just that good. His vocal in that performance was insane. I was just off the chart. Yeah. Mark, how about you? What's your show?
It's literally that reason why, I choose the Fresno show as well. Obviously the rest of it as well, but I mean, that is the one, kind of like Corey, that's the one I've heard the most in terms of like their live recordings. It's that one. And it's just that, I mean, come on, Sammy sounds so damn good.
Oh my
God. He sounds so dang. I mean, the whole band does, but it's just like, if you told me that was the only live record that they ever, you know, did ever put out. I'm like, good, because I don't want to hear anything else, because I don't want any sort of like anything to taint what I have, what my view on this particular live album. So yeah, just, it's just so good. It's just so good. There's no point denying it. Although I did like Ryan Powell's little answer he put there, Red Rocks during a blizzard.
Ballister. Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Yeah.
Live right here, right now, is one of my, it has one of my favorite live album moments where they start playing the beginning to Won't Get Fooled Again. And Sammy goes, this is The Who. Like, nobody in the fucking world knows Won't Get Fooled Again was by The Who.
Oh my God. You would be surprised how many people probably didn't know that until he shouted it out. Like, oh, okay. Like, you'd be surprised.
But when you did the live album too, I think, again, I promise, especially for the lurkers, this is the only time on this podcast I'm going to rag on David Lee Roth. But that performance of Eagles Fly, that's the difference between a real singer and the frontman of a band. David Lee Roth cannot do that. He can't get a guitar and sing that song the way he did it and still be able to have, you know, however many, 20,000, 25,000 people in the palm of his hand. That's the difference for me. And that's sort of one of those high watermarks in terms of, if you can stand on stage in front of that many people with just an acoustic guitar and rock the fuck out of it, that takes a bit of skill and a bit of talent. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, it takes a lot. Now, Dave could have found another way to keep the audience in his hand, like not doing that. Like, if he just took the stage and just grinned like an idiot and was like, what's up, motherfucker? Or like, whatever. Like, whoa, wow. Like, he is fucked up, but I'm here for it. But you're right, though, in terms of, like, hand him a guitar, stage is yours, take it. I think he loses the audience immediately.
Yeah. Who would have been your pick to replace Sammy rather than Gary Cherone? So we'll apologies to Gary, which is, of course, one of the brilliant catchphrases that have been spawned from this wonderful show. But if you were picking, who would you put in front of Van Halen?
Oh, my God. That's a great question, because now you have to factor in who was active during that time.
Yep.
And well,
let's apply global rules again. Let's say that it's any point in history. We'll do the time machine thing, and we can displace people. You know what? If you want, like, you know, I don't know, some singer from the Roaring Twenties, you can have him.
Oh, man. I don't know why. This isn't my answer, but for whatever reason, Jeff Tate pops in my brain, and that's just hilarious to even think about the singer of Queensryche singing Van Halen songs. Or former singer of Queensryche, I should say. Not him, but I just, the visual of that makes me laugh. I don't know his name. Please fact check me on this one, and I apologize to him, but I always, not so much these days anymore, but in their prime, the Cult singer was so damn good.
Oh, okay.
Yes, thank you. So damn good. Like, I love that, the early Cult stuff, man, and just like Fire Woman's like the theme song I sing to that one over there, and it's just like that whole they used to be so good. Unfortunately, Ian can't sing that way anymore. He can still sing and he still does, but it's, you know, they have to take the key down a little bit because he just can't hit those notes anymore. Hey, man, it's
Sammy
unfortunate.
Sammy has to tune down. I mean, that's just a product.
Yeah, Sammy's
got to
do it. I mean, yeah,
it's the guy, right? So
that's true. Yeah, age comes into it, and then whatever. But I mean, it's still, you know, you just kind of go like, yeah, but man, in their heyday. So I think because if I say Bruce Dickinson or Rob Halford, that sounds like kind of a cheat. And honestly, I just don't really see it with those two. I don't know why I see it with Ian from the Cult more, but I think with his vocal sensibility, the way Dave sounds and the way Sammy sounds, like, I don't know. I think that would have been a real interesting dynamic if he hadn't already done it. I might have already said Gary Cherone, but we saw what happened there. So,
apologies.
I'll say Ian from the Cult.
Really cool. That's, I like that. Someone I wouldn't have thought of in a million years, but now you've said it, I kind of want to hear that now.
Now you want to hear
what that would sound like. Yeah. How about you, Corey? What do you got?
You know what? I picked two, a male and a female, because I was pretty sure Mark would take my number one, and he didn't. But my number one was Chris Cornell.
Very interesting. Okay.
one of the best vocalists in rock and roll, right?
Like, oh, hands down. Yeah,
he could do everything. He could do the Dave stuff. He could do the blues stuff. He could do the Sammy stuff. Like, he would have knocked it out of the park. And my female vote would have went to somebody who actually kind of auditioned for the role before they hired Gary, and that's Canadian songstress Sass Jordan. She actually jammed. Yeah, Alex Van Halen called her up. I was just reading an interview with her and invited her down to 5150. And she did like a week of just jamming with the boys. And at one point, her manager's like, they're auditioning you to be their singer. She's like, fuck no. A woman can't front Van Halen. But Sass Jordan, like, she has got the pipes. She's got the rock voice to cover both eras. And I think she would knock it out of the fucking park. So here's a little thumbs up for Canada and for women. Sass Jordan would have been a great fucking front woman for Van Halen.
I also have a woman vocalist to throw in the mix as my number two as well. Taylor Dane.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, now there's a name I've heard about in at least three decades.
You want to talk about some pipes. Like, people forgot about Taylor Dane, and I'm here to tell you, go back and remember, because Taylor Dane can throw down, dude.
No shit. Dude,
Patty Smyth would
have been a good one,
Patty
too.
Patty Smyth would have been cool. I could see that, actually.
Jeff Scott Soto, I think, pretty good vocalist. He would have fit right in, yeah.
Okay, can I get... I haven't done this... I haven't sort of answered the question myself yet, I don't think, to this point, but...
You
see what you think. Rod Stewart. I would have fucking like
that would have been cool.
Like Faces Era Rod Stewart.
Faces Era Rod Stewart, especially the Dave stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He's got the range. He's got the swagger. Okay. I don't know, man. I think it'd be pretty fucking rough.
Maybe if he
I don't
did
know. Tom says yikes. I don't know if that's
maybe if he did specifically like Dave era.
The Sammy stuff. I don't know if Rod could do the Sammy era.
Oh, he could.
You think so? Can you see Rod Stewart singing Dreams?
Yeah,
no, dude, like, but I can see.
Oh boy,
that guy's got range, mate. You don't think it is? Go try and sing. Stay with me by Faces. It's like, oh yeah, this is easy. Oh wait, where's he going? He's still going up. He's still. Oh shit! Like for me, it's like, oh my god, I'm glad I forgot about Taylor Dane. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you are mistaken, Tom. You are mistaken. Like Taylor Dane was a beast, man. That's
he's got a hell of a voice.
Yeah.
And go seek out some Sass Jordan. Fucking that chick can rock. And I was telling Kevin, she's going to be playing about an hour away from me with Trooper and the Northern Pikes in November. I'm going to go check out that show. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, you got CJ.
Wait. So Rod Stewart doing the Dave era, they kick him out. And then for the Sammy era, they bring in Ronnie James Dio. put a little more devil in the mix.
It's
if we're talking older singers, one guy I thought of was Paul Rogers. You know, he did it for Queen. He could cover both eras of Van Halen, I think, really, really well.
And
is actually not bad.
And then if they do what Queen did and play a little All Right Now and Feel Like Making Love with like Eddie and Alex, that'd be fucking cool. So I had Paul Rogers
doing All Right Now.
Too.
Oh my god! Another thing I need to hear that now. Oh my god!
Isn't that so good? That's so great. Yeah.
Eddie shredding.
And then
that
I thought,
solo.
Geez, I thought Ann Wilson can sing anything, but can she do like Dave or Van Halen? I don't know. Like she obviously has the pipes and the range.
Is it too rock? Is it too cock rock for a female singer?
That's the thing. Yeah, like the Dave era is a little too much of. But I mean, but Anne could still. She could have made that work. But yeah, you're right, though, Corey. Mm-hmm. Like I think Dave's got a particular swagger, man, about him and in his vocal ability. So it's really hard to imagine anybody doing any of his songs just because you know you're not going to hear it the way Dave's going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Josh has a good one before we start on the question. Michael Hutchins.
Oh, man. That'd be fucking great. I'm a huge NXS fan. Like, I don't know why those guys are not. They're not in the Hall of Fame. No one talks about him anymore. No. Michael Hutchins was a beast of a singer.
He can sing anything. He can sing anything. And he's got that front man cool that David Lee Roth had. Oh, that's a good one. Good job, Josh.
Before he passed, Michael did a cover of The Passenger from Iggy Pop. And it was put on the Batman Forever soundtrack. That's how I was aware of it. But that version is fucking great.
Yep.
Yep.
100%. Just throwing that out there.
So, Corey, if you could pick any artist to cover any Van Halen song, who would it be and what song would they cover?
You know what? I think every artist should cover a Van Halen song at some point in their career. I'm going to go with one of my favorite bands that I just got their CD. It's called, it's by the band Dome, featuring Sean McGinnity and Todd McGinnity. And I'd love to hear them do any Van Halen song, but give me a little Running with the Devil. I would love to hear Dome cover that song. So that's my choice. You can really pick anybody. Like, hey, fuck, give me Genesis doing Black and Blue. Why the hell not? Like, you know, by the way, if you like Genesis, Kevin and I do a show called Ultimate Catalog Clash, recovering Genesis, Phil Collins there. It's a lot of fun. Check that out. But I was thinking, you know, I could go Foo Fighters. I could go with whoever, ZZ Top. Everybody should do a Van Halen cover. Give me some Dome. Give me some McGinnity Brothers. Anything off Van Halen 1, but Running with the Devil specifically.
See, there you go, Mark. This is why Corey Morissette is the devourer of podcasts, because he just slides the references in when you're not expecting them.
So. That's right.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Well, I can totally hear Sean singing Running with the Devil. And I know that Todd
100%.
Certainly can play it. So,
100%. And Scott Moreau wants to hear Smashing Pumpkins do Once. They could actually probably do a decent version of that. It's not a song. It's not a song I enjoy, and it's not a band I enjoy. So, perfect.
The worst of both worlds. What about you, Mark?
Worst of both worlds.
Oh, man. Well, this is going to be real, real wacky, but I would love to hear Deftones do Humans Being.
Whoa, what?
I have no idea what that would remotely sound like.
Wow. Oh,
But I'm here for the chaos of it. There are probably other songs that they would do like better justice to, but I don't know, just like for whatever reason, I want to hear a cover of Humans Being, but and I was trying to think of maybe a different band, but I was like, no, I'm sticking with it. Like, I love the Deftones is my favorite, so I was like, yeah, let me get a Deftones cover of Humans Being, because whatever that turns out to be is just going to be so on the other end of the spectrum from the original that it'll either be fantastic or it'll be maybe the worst thing Deftones has ever recorded. But I tell you this, look, the Deftones have recorded covers of Sade. They have recorded the Smiths. They have done like, and there are other covers that I can't even like remember right now, but I don't know. They just, I think they could find a way to make that work.
What did they do from Sade?
No Ordinary Love. And it's
really
great.
What?
Yeah.
That'd be something like
great. It sounds just like, I mean, it's Chino singing and not her, but it sounds just like the original.
Wow. Do you remember, mm-hmm. who was it? Faith No More did Easy. Was it?
Easy. They right? did Easy.
But they did it a note for note cover, mm-hmm. which was super weird. It's like, what the this is just like karaoke. Like, why have you...
Oh, that very much tracks one. For Faith No More, though.
That's another one. Okay, I can't... Oh, I cannot believe I didn't think of that. That's another potential singer. Mike Patton.
Mike Patton
yeah. could sing the fuck out of the entire Van Halen catalog.
Yeah.
Could he do Dreams? Does he have that range?
He could... Well, they would probably change the key on that one, and he would probably do it a very different way, but I think he would do it really well.
How about A Perfect Circle doing Intruder and Pretty Woman? Yeah,
that would be very drab and very like Pretty Woman in the sense of like ironic. Like, it's like, oh, look at that pretty woman. Well, she thinks she's so pretty.
Walking down the street.
It's like, it's all you know, it's no substance, all just but I'm here for it because I love A Perfect Circle.
It would be almost be as cool. bad. It would be almost as bad as Van Halen doing Pretty Woman. Mic drop. Fucking mic drop.
No. We're picking that mic back up.
Good night, everybody. Don't forget to tip your waitress. We're done.
I'm going to pour you out some soapy water to wash out that filthy mouth.
I like Van Halen's cover of Pretty Woman, you fucker. Fucking Brits. Well,
great. Hey, when we get to Dive It Down, I'm definitely jumping on that live stream. Okay, Mark.
That's not the worst cover on that album.
I'm sorry. I didn't
say that.
Well, did we even answer the question there? I think we ended up on a tangent, didn't we? Because I asked you what song do you most frequently recommend to people who don't know Van Halen, and then we took a left turn at Albuquerque.
Well, you did, motherfucker. You asked 9, And then he said, no, fuck it, we're going back to eights. Now you have to re-ask nine. So I have to cut this part out now.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, my God. I got to edit so much shit.
Leave this part in. Leave this part in. It's
leave this part in, yeah.
Let's just leave it in. To answer your question, the thing is, I don't think there's been anyone in my life that doesn't know who Van Halen is. However, there's a lot of people that I know that don't listen to, you know, classic rock of that era. So if they were to ask me, it's like, yeah, I like some Van Halen, but I'm not well familiar. What can you recommend? Mm-hmm. I would probably just recommend, like, here's Van Halen 1. Start there. Just the whole album. Just start there. So I don't want to say Ain't Talking About Love again for every answer, but I mean, I fucking love that song. I would probably, yep, I'm saying it. Ain't Talking About Love.
Nice. Nice, Corey.
Good call. Man, there's so many. I kind of put a Sammy and a Dave, and now I'm thinking about it. I would probably pick different ones. What I written down earlier in the week, I put Dreams for Sammy. Because you have the keyboards in there, you got a great Eddie solo, and you got Sammy just singing the fuck out of that song. I thought that'd be pretty cool. And for Dave, I had Panama. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, geez, DOA would be a really cool one. Or Unchained to me is kind of the ultimate Van Halen song. So I'd go Unchained.
With that one too. Yeah.
And then for Sammy, you want some fucking stank, Van Halen stank, Pound Cake. Fuck yeah, give me a little Pound Cake. I would maybe go with that. So I'm amending my original choices, and I'm saying maybe give me a little Pound Cake, give me a little Unchained.
Nice.
I would also, if I'm going to recommend the Sammy era, I would start with listen to 5150, the track. Like, give that a listen, see how you feel about Sammy there.
Yeah.
So yeah, Ain't Talking About Love in 5150.
All right, well, let's wrap up the 10 questions. Corey. Right. Describe Van Halen in 3 words.
I can't. You can't define this band in 3 words. I think I was able to do it for the Tom Petty podcast I did with you. But my first word is metal. And not because they're necessarily, even though they are kind of heavy metal. To me, metal is more of a way of life. You can't just say metal and mean just music, right? It's fucking metal. Metal means just the perfect amalgamation of music and attitude and everything. Eddie is a fucking samurai. You want David Lee Roth with doing karate kicks off the drum riser? Goddamn right. That's fucking metal. Mikey with his Jack Daniels bass, that's metal. Alex with more drums than a human being needs to, almost like Neil Peart, for fuck's sakes. He can almost go all the way around on his drum kit sometimes. Van Halen is just motherfucking metal. They're just perfect. Word number two for me was goofballs, because Eddie often described Van Halen as just a bunch of goofballs, and they're just always having fun. And you never see Eddie Van Halen with a guitar in his hand and B without a smile on his face. He's just having fun. David Lee Roth looks with the shit-eating grin, looks like a fucking idiot, but he's a goofball. He's having the time of his life. Michael's having the time of his life. Even Alex with the neck brace on, back in the day, having the time of his life playing music. They're just a bunch of goofballs. That was my word number two. And word number three, mighty. Like, the word mighty, and I know they're Mitch LaFon on Twitter tries to assign the word mighty to bands like Bon Jovi, and it's like, fuck you all the way to hell, because mighty does not encompass Bon Jovi. That is one word that encompasses Van Halen 100%. You can't put that word on any other band but the mighty Van Halen. So no, not Bon Jovi, not Def Leppard, not Nickelback, whoever else Mitch decides to put mighty on. It's only for Van Halen. Goofballs, metal, and mighty. Those are my three words. Scott had some good ones too. Party, pop, metal. So he got one of mine. Yeah. Party was one too I thought about, because they're the ultimate party rock band, 100%. But they can do darker stuff. Don't Tell Me What Love Can Do from Balance is one of my favorite Van Halen tracks. And there's nothing, party related on that track. They could branch out of that. But it's one I almost considered, because that does encompass the band very well.
Okay. I feel like the only band that can utilize mighty are the Boston's, because they had to use it twice.
<That's a name. laughs>
It's like, yeah, definitely. There are many words I would describe Bon Jovi. Mighty's not one of them.
It's not one of them. No.
And I'm not saying that as a hater, but no, I'm just a realist. I'm like, mighty.
I really like Mitch LaFon, but mighty Bon Jovi. Oh my God!
Yeah. No, that, dude, look, he sounds like a Jersey guy. Is he a Jersey guy?
Quick
he's
segue.
Canadian.
Quick segue. Oh. I saw Bon Jovi. Like, I used to be a huge Bon Jovi fan before I grew up. When I was still a kid, went to see him live, and Billy Idol opened for them. And when I saw Billy Idol on stage, I was like, "Oh, that's what a rock star is." And then Bon Jovi came out, and I was like, "Oh, he's not as good as Billy Idol." So,
yeah. I was about to say, like, that's you went from like having like the time of your life to an adequate time, you know? Because they're not Bon Jovi's not a terrible band. They're just, you know, they make
they're not
the music
mighty.
They do, and
they're
not mighty. They are not. Yeah. Yeah, I would have called Billy mighty before them, and I wouldn't even use that for Billy Idol.
I like Josh. Yeah, the mighty Huey Lewis at the news.
Love it.
The mighty
Kylie
Minogue. Like that makes sense. The mighty Kylie. Actually, yeah, sure. Why not?
That fits better than Bon Jovi. Same with Huey Lewis.
It definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely does. So that's anyway. I'm kind of with Corey. It's really hard to describe three words. But the best like phrase in three words that I can describe them is epic fun rock. Because like even when they're talking about something like really serious or something potentially sad and heartbreaking, it's still epic. You're still having fun listening to it because whether it's Sammy, whether it's Dave, like leading the charge, they are still going to entertain you. You're still going to be filled with that Van Halen energy. And you can call them heavy metal of a particular era or just simply rock and roll. They're a rock, you know, so and it's always an epic time. So epic fun rock just seems to really fit the mold if we're going to limit it down to three words for me.
Do you think rock music, and especially hard rock music, sometimes takes itself way too seriously? Because that's when I saw Van Halen, every time I've seen Van Halen on sort of live things online or whatever, they're just having fun, man. And rock and roll should be fun. And to Eddie Van Halen, no matter what's going on with David Lee Roth in the dressing room or with Sammy Hagar and or the lawyers or with Michael, whatever, as soon as the lights go up and he starts playing his guitar, you can tell that's his happy place. That's where he wants to be all the time, and he's just having fun. And that to me is always number one. Is Van Halen is just a fun band, right?
It's fun.
You're talking
and it's
to
imperfect.
Yeah,
it
you're
have
talking
to be
a guy. Who's like steeped in the metal world, and like metal musicians, they do nothing except take themselves way too damn seriously, like to a point to where it's really stupid and annoying. Also, that's why I gravitate towards those bands where their music might sound intense and serious, but then you see them on stage and like as an example, I love Killswitch Engage. They're like probably my second favorite band. They're cutting up on stage constantly. They take to the mic and yell gibberish and just dumb shit because they're just having fun. And they are a band that do not, they obviously work hard on the music they put out, but they, when they're on stage, they're there to have a good time. They're not there to be like, "Oh, look at us, you know, tough metal guys. We'll kick your ass." They're like, no, they're like, by their own admission, we take the opposite approach because being serious up there is really stupid. So, and they have influenced other bands to kind of like take the stick out of their asses too, and just like, just go up there and have fun. And if you smile, who cares? Like, enjoy it. Like, laugh. Like, just be silly up there.
You know what I realized, Mark, is that your three words kind of mirror my three words. Epic, right? Mm-hmm. Mighty, it's just another word for mighty.
Yeah.
Fun, another word for goofballs, and rock, another word for metal. Like we kind of picked the
look
same
at that.
Thing. It was kind of cool. Yeah.
That, my friend, is some phenomenal backpedaling. I love that. It's absolutely amazing. That's brilliant. You know what? This is what comedians do. This is what comics do, is they find connections that aren't there for comedy and to make it work. So, bravo, sir. Bravo. Okay, well, let's wrap it up there. We've got a lot more to get through, including the top 10 songs for both Mark and Corey. Talk about of the songs that they've covered so far, which ones are their favorites, which ones they both picked, which ones they omitted, and what sort of album distribution is. So part two coming very soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget?
Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.